Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Dr. Peter Cookson. And Dr. Cookson is going to talk about the new corona variants. Coronavirus variants, COVID variants. So, you know, as we're taping this, it's just a few days after Thanksgiving, and by Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, the news hit that there's a new variant, and over the past 2 days, it's been all over the place, and there's all kinds of speculation and what's going to happen and how much this is going to spread. So what's your view, Peter?
That's very interesting. There's a whole bunch of literature out there. All of a sudden, it's exploded onto the scene, thank goodness, and it helps me at least to scour the thoughts of persons who we have listened to in the past and are generally very knowledgeable about what's going on with regard to the pandemic and the coronavirus variants that have evolved over the course of the couple of years when we've been tracking this. And this one, the called Omicron, which is very interesting. During my educational career, I did take several years of Koine or ancient Greek as part of my studies. And Omicron is the 15th letter in the Greek alphabet, and Delta is the fourth. So why did they skip from 4 to 15 in the naming process puzzles me. I'm not sure who's responsible for deciding that Omicron should be the name for this new one. And I know this sounds funny, but what's in between? And what has been going on that we don't know about? So that's what goes through my mind. That, of course, that's conspiracy theory stuff. But nevertheless, you know, these guys don't jump around like that. They go alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, and so on. And then all of a sudden, Omicron shows up. And I said, what's going on here? What are you guys doing? And I don't have an answer to that, and I'm not sure it's important. But what is important is that this new strain has been recognized as having multiple mutations instead of just a simple mutation that enables the Delta strain, for instance, to reproduce more rapidly and to enter more rapidly into the host cells and thereafter reproduce and thereafter be expelled in greater numbers in the breathing or coughing, sneezing or whatever have you, and the microparticles that people put out there when they're speaking, like I'm doing right now. So what they have said is that instead of just a simple single mutation, there are multiple mutations that are all related to what's called the spike protein. And there's a couple things that are interesting here. One is that up until most recently, those persons who studied the microbiology or the chemistry of the DNA of the coronavirus have said that a significant portion of the spike protein of the coronavirus is, quote, conserved, unquote, which means that the virus somehow or other is able to protect the protein combination, the proteins that are responsible for anchoring the spike to the viral capsule, and that does not change from one variant to the next. And the human immune system recognizes this persistence and attacks and sets up an antibody that will attack this persistent segment of the virus. And that enables those of us who have had the infection and also who have been vaccinated to respond to a new variant in a meaningful way so that those of us who have been vaccinated don't get so sick as those who have not been vaccinated. And this, they have not mentioned whether or not this area of conservation that the coronavirus has and persisted with up until the Delta, for sure. I have no idea about the Omicron. No one has said anything about this conserved area of the spike protein. So if that has changed, then those of us who have felt comfortable that we've already had the virus or that we've had the vaccinations, well, we don't need to worry so much because even if we catch it, we won't be very, very sick. I'm not so sure that that's going to go through. However, the people who are looking at those persons who have been tested for and had proven to have this new Omicron strain don't seem to be sicker than the ones who have had the Delta strain, for instance, and have been unvaccinated. So perhaps that new strain does have that conserved segment of the spike protein that enables those of us who have some measure of antibody formation or protection against the coronavirus will be similarly protected against this new Omicron strain. But that's, again, speculation. I can't tell you anything more than just what I've said. It seems like we may be okay, but I'm not going to bet my dollar on it just yet. The other piece that is of interest to me personally and also to 50% of the people who have suffered from the coronavirus and have had long-term follow-up effects from it, a whole bunch of them were tested using a sophisticated PET scans of their brains to see whether or not some brain symptoms like memory loss or brain fog, you know, who the hell knows what that is, but I do because I have it and I suffer from it. And some days it's okay and other days I don't feel like doing anything. So, but they looked at this using the sophisticated imaging techniques that we have available to us today, looking specifically for areas in the brain that look unhealthy or look like they have been damaged. And they also can determine whether or not the metabolic processes in the brain have been changed. It's a very sophisticated way to detect brain anomalies or abnormalities. And so the answer to the question is there something in there that ain't right? And the answer is, we can't find it, not using these techniques. Does that mean that these people are crazy? No, of course not. Does that mean that what that means is that the techniques that we have available to us today are unable to develop or to detect the subtle changes that produce the symptoms that these people are suffering from? But, you know, at least as best we can tell, our brains, or my brain, is not melting, or if it is, it's melting so slowly that we can't find it yet. But there's something going on in there that these people are not crazy. There's too many. Half of the people are not crazy, that's for sure. But our sophisticated techniques are unable to detect that. So the reason for my bringing this up is a personal note, but also to tell you that it takes some very sophisticated virologists to study this new variant strain. And one of the things that was brought out this morning was when they asked Fauci about it, he said a couple things. One was it's probably already here in the United States, and I would okay. Underscore that. He's probably right. It probably is already here in the United States because now that they started to look for it, they're identifying it in a number of other countries. And also, what is of interest is two things. One is that the people of South Africa, the people being the virology specialists in South Africa who have been alerted to or who first detected this particular new variant, have already done the DNA analysis. And now that's remarkable. That's a big job to do that, and they have already done that job and have published the information so that anybody who is curious about it can duplicate the study. So we have one on the one hand, somebody saying it's probably here. On the other hand, here's the information you need in order to detect it. And then on the third hand, if you got one, they're shutting down the air traffic between the U.S. and South Africa, as well as between Canada and South Africa. The Canadians are saying, whoa, you know, we're going to jump on that one too. And so are other countries around the world, just sort of quarantining South Africa and many of the smaller countries in this southern, you know, sub-Saharan area of Africa, which is of interest. It underscores the statements that I've heard repeatedly, which is, you know, we're not going to be out of the woods here until everybody on the planet is vaccinated. And then they have to say, well, what's the virus going to do in the meantime? Well, the virus is already, in the meantime, getting very, very busy in its efforts to circumvent our efforts to control it. And so we don't have all of the data just now to tell you whether or not the vaccine will indeed protect the individual. My speculation was that, and perhaps it's hopeful speculation, that there is a conserved area of the spike protein that will enable those of us who have had vaccines and have had the virus will be protected from it. But again, that's still speculation. Who knows? What they have said so far when asked repeatedly is that, as far as we can tell, this virus, although it spreads more readily than the Delta strain, it so far has not demonstrated any greater virulence or ugliness or inability to make people sicker than the previous strains of the Delta and the Alpha and the Beta strains from, interestingly enough, from South Africa as well as Great Britain. So that's what's, you know, where we are right now. This ain't going away. It's just something that you and I have discussed long before, and you repeatedly asked me, what do I think is going to happen to this? And I said, it's here to stay. And more people are agreeing with our earlier assessment of this particular virus and disease. It's here to stay. It ain't going away. And we're going to have to learn how to live with it. And the vaccination is one big step in the health and of the planet. And I think you asked me about something earlier in our early conversation that we had this week or this morning was, what do you think the economic impact of this virus is going to be on the U.S. economy and on the worldwide economy? And what we're seeing, my response to that was that in Germany and Eastern Europe, they're going through another shutdown. Italy's going through another shutdown. These are massive, you know, have tremendous impact on small businesses. Big guys might be able to, you know, struggle through a shutdown, but small business, you know, you close a restaurant for a couple of weeks, and those guys are basically are out of business. What are they going to do? When they send their employees home, when they send the chef home, what is the chef going to do? I mean, he's going to get hungry pretty soon, and then he's going to look desperately for another job. He's going to find one. And so when you say a month later or 2 months later, okay, we can open up now, come on back, and he's going to say, hey, fella, you know, I got real hungry during a couple of months or so when I didn't have a job. So I found work elsewhere, and I'm busy now. Yes, dear. What is that?
My question to you is, you know, we're a few days away, a few days past Thanksgiving, okay? And then it really hit, you know, the news around Thanksgiving and, you know, as we're recording this, it's the Sunday after Thanksgiving. And it's all over the news and you had said it's speculation, but why all of a sudden this thing comes out of nowhere to be the top story on news shows?
That's a wow. The implications of that question are amazing, at least in the mind of my mind that is constantly searching every day through the mainstream media and whatever other media I can get my hands on, and notably medical journals. And I don't do computer, but I certainly listen and pick up my nose and my ears and my nose and look around for other information. And then applying the considerable background that I have in microbiology and virology, I can arrive at conclusions that you won't find in the mainstream media. And you can call them speculation. Well, bless your heart, of course they are. But all of the speculations that you and I have made beginning in 2020 have all come out. And they have all played out to exactly where we are now. So why, I think what you're hinting at is there was some reasonable explanations for, or not speculation, there's good reason to believe that the virus that we call the alpha strain or the wild strain emerged from a laboratory in Wuhan, period. Did it emerge from any other laboratory? Of course it did, very likely. In someplace else on the world, well, there's all kinds of BSL-4 laboratories around the world. And that's another big topic that has been handled by good people who have counted the darn things and said, why do we have all of these BSL-4 laboratories around the world? And so, the answer to that question is they are called biosafety laboratories, okay? And if you can swallow that one, I'd like to have your explanation for why we need 40 biosafety laboratories around the world or even more. And then, my next question is, okay, then as of 2020, when the coronavirus escaped from a poorly managed biosafety BSL-4 laboratory in Wuhan, China, escaped, got out of there, and then got into the general population of that huge metropolitan area of Wuhan and that county of Wuhan or the zone or region, what have you, the territory. They did that laboratory close down? Well, as a matter of fact, it did not. How about all of those other biosafety laboratories? What did they do during the last year and a half? I mean, year and, 10 months? 11 months? What were they doing? Were they all just twiddling their thumbs? Or were they working on something else? Did they continue to work on the COVID vaccine, the COVID virus? And if so, is it possible that among the things that they discovered was a new variant discovered? That's a nice word. So what's going on there? And, here today, in today's front page above the fold, article about this new virus, there's a comment made that, and by the way, the Pfizer and AstraZeneca and Moderna and what have you are thinking about tweaking the vaccine that they've been peddling since 2021 to adapt it to these new variants. Well, what the heck have they been doing since then? These are not... they're not foolish people. They're not stupid people. They have good laboratory technicians. They have good people who think. And those people know darn well that this virus is busy, and its job is to find hosts into which it can invade and hibernate and live. And so these guys have known that since day one, and only now, in November, a year and what? A year and 6 months or so, they're saying, well, maybe we ought to develop a vaccine that will directly address these variants. What have they been doing for all that time? What's going on? What else is going on? Have they been just collecting their money and running to the bank? Or have the laboratory technologists been directed in a different way? Okay, or have been told to follow a different direction. I don't, of course, know the answer to that, but I know we got good people who think, and here we are in upstate New York asking these questions that undoubtedly have been asked in by good people in the Pfizer laboratories, in the Moderna laboratories, AstraZeneca laboratories, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know what the answers to those questions have been that undoubtedly have been asked that you and I are asking right now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound good. So your question about what's going to happen to the economy when this thing gets out is a very, very important one, because you know, we just go to the grocery store and for $150 you get three bags full at best. And we both know
mm-hmm.
what it was like for a year ago or 2 years ago, and they want to blame the current administration in Washington for what we're seeing at the grocery store. Well, you know, these guys are coming in at the end of the game or you know, holding a bag that they didn't create. And, you know, I'm not political either one way or another, but this is a game or this is a tragedy that has been unfolding for a very long time, and we are looking at a disaster that is unfolding right now.
Well, you know, both you and I are retired.
Yes.
So I'm okay as far as, you know, my pension, my Social Security, but there are so many people less fortunate than I am who lost their jobs, who don't know what they're going to do, who is facing this crisis all over again. And it just seems so, just frightening. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And that particular issue has been addressed in three of the articles that I read this morning before we got together at this for this particular talk. And the articles all had to do with the people that you are directly concerned about, that you are talking about very directly. And that's a growing segment, a growing segment of our population, our individuals who are out of work, whose unemployment insurance, et cetera, has ceased. And these people are hungry. They are crowded. And they are unable to provide even the basics, or only perhaps the basics, with regard to hygiene, personal hygiene, and their little children, and lots of them. So they have decided maybe we ought to vaccinate the kids too. Well, that's a good idea. They don't have any problem vaccinating one-day-old infants in the nursery, up to as 15 vaccines, one-day-old. So what was the big holdup on vaccinating 5-year-olds, and now in some cases are okaying vaccinations down to 3-year-olds. What's going on? Is that a political decision? Doesn't sound like a medical decision, does it? If you don't have any problem at all giving a hepatitis B and a hepatitis A vaccine to a one-day-old infant, newborn, et cetera, why are you having a problem waiting for 3 years before you vaccinate those? Is there another agenda? Is this something I have to ask, you know? Because a good pediatrician will say, yeah, we don't have any problem vaccinating DPT and measles, mumps, and MMRs and hepatitis, et cetera, and on it goes. But we do have a problem deciding whether or not they can have a vaccine. Even the Johnson & Johnson, which is a vaccine very similar to all of the other neonatal vaccines that they give. You have to keep asking questions, and thank you very much for thinking along those lines, because once you start asking the questions and putting together the other data, the answers you come up with are not reassuring, put it that way. The other issue that I've been looking at here is two recent articles in the Journal of the American Medical Association that talk about the sudden increase in the numbers of people who fit the category that you described, that is unemployed now, no further income with regard to their unemployment insurance, and they are getting sick, and they are getting sicker than they had in the past. And there's something I found this morning that I did not know, and that is that in the Los Angeles County, where they keep very good records, the Latino population has a lower death rate than the white population does over pest. You know, the data that I'm looking at stretches back to 2011, and then all of a sudden, 2019, it goes through the roof, and it surpasses the white death rate. And the white death rate did increase dramatically, as probably directly related to the coronavirus in 2019 and 2020, and et cetera. But you know, they unfortunately, in my opinion, put it this way, it is very complex. And they talk about the comorbidities. Well, the comorbidities were there since 2011, and all of a sudden they want to start talking about the comorbidities as a underlying factor or causative factor for the dramatic increase in the number of deaths related to the coronavirus, as contributed with the significant contributing factors as, you know, morbidity, what do you call it, obesity, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, et cetera. But they don't want to address the issue though. That was there all along, and it didn't have an effect. And all of a sudden now it has an effect. Well, all right, so you add coronavirus and that makes a difference. Well, I could buy into that. But my other problem that I have is that there's something in Peru and Chile and Brazil and Bolivia, the numbers per 100,000 of people dying from coronavirus is far in excess of it is anywhere else, hugely in excess. And I, for one time, some time ago, I came across some data that said the DNA is different in those people, and their immune systems are slightly different. And I haven't seen anybody pick up on that yet and test for it. I certainly can't do it on my organic farm out here, but there's something else in the genetics of those people that predisposes them to suffer more from these viruses. Socioeconomic changes are important, but there's something else lurking in there, and I don't know what it is. But anyhow, there's so many questions. This is so complex. There's so many other questions. Right. And if I ever come across the answer to what those guys, the scientists, were doing in the laboratories between January of 2020 and today, I'll let you know. And why it wasn't that they were working on a new vaccine, quote, tweaked, unquote, I think that would be a good topic for a discussion. What do you think?
Well, that's going to be a discussion for another show, because our time is up.
Okay.
You've been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson talking about the new coronavirus variants. What's it called again, so people will know?
Omicron? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, Omicron. Yep.
Omicron,
and
the 15th letter of the Greek alphabet.
Okay.
And ask them why. What happened between 4 and 15?
And I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Peter, we will be talking again. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it. See you later. Bye-bye.